Hello and welcome. I'm joined today by Hugh Agro and Alex Black, and we're going to be talking gold and the gold thematic and why you should invest in gold. So, gentlemen, welcome and thank you very much. How are you both? You well?
Thanks, Matt.
Good to be with you, Gordon.
Great. Right, let's start with you, Hugh. Give us 30 seconds on your company, and then, Alex, if you could just follow straight after that and do the same thing, and then we'll dive into some questions, okay? Hugh, over to you.
Very good. Good to be with you, Matt. Thanks for having us. And, Alex, really nice to see you and be part of this panel with you. Revival Gold, of course, advance in the Bear Track Arnett Gold Project in Idaho in the western United States.
Yeah, and ourselves, Rio 2 Limited, has the Phoenix Gold Project in Chile, and we're in the current financing stage of our project, looking to take it forward into production late next year.
Brilliant. Thanks, guys. Look, I think today is really about introducing the gold thematic, I guess reintroducing it, if anything, to lots of people, because I think it's been a tough 3 years, but also to a new audience perhaps are looking in and going, well, hang on, gold price seems to be on a little bit of a run here. And we saw that during PDAC, it popped $150. I mean, what did that do for you in conversations, Hugh?
Look, it's really turned people on to the gold price here in the current moment. But I would say this. In 20 years, the gold price has quadrupled. In the last 5 years, it's up some 65%, 10-15% in the last year. So, look, the price of gold's performing, no question about it.
Okay, but we're also seeing a little pop in, you know, the cost base as well over the past couple of years. You know, COVID and printing of money and, you know, trying to, quite frankly, find the people to actually come and work for you. So there is that component set. We'll talk about that in a minute. But, Alex, you're seeing a slight revival in the interest in Chile. We've seen, obviously, the gold doing its thing, and you're in the middle of financing, effectively. Going to be quite a big project down there.
You know, we went through a tough time there, as everybody probably knows. I'm not going to go through that in detail here. We're in the financing phase. Yesterday, there was some good news out of Chile with Antofagasta taking down a $2.5 billion loan to expand one of their concentrators in Chile from a consortium of banks made up of international banks, not only Chilean banks. So that was good news. People have asked me, is Chile open for business? Yes, it is. What happened to us was an anomaly. We're past that now, and we're definitely going to build this project.
Well, I'm glad to hear it, and we will hear about it more in a second. So, Hugh, I mean, talk to me about, you're both advanced development stories. I mean, maybe Alex is a little bit ahead of you, but advanced development stories, nevertheless, and they are of great interest at the moment, because we're seeing, I'm trying to work out, what does it mean for your shareholders this year? Because we're seeing the big boys will be, effectively just got handed $150 per ounce, you know, free money with this recent pop in the gold price. What does it mean for them? What did they then do? And do companies like you benefit from that?
Yeah, well, firstly, Rio 2 is, of course, quite a bit further ahead than us. Permitted project and at the financing stage for construction. So, you know, this is one of those kind of situations, I think, that really benefits from this $200 move in the price of gold of late. So good timing for Alex in terms of his funding plans. But I think, you know, as a guy who's worked in the corporate development trenches and in banking in the past, what I can tell you happens is as people start to panic at the big companies, they will start to panic. They will look to fill those pipelines, those cupboards that have run bare, and they'll scramble around to find projects that are either construction ready or near to construction ready. They will do as you're starting to see some of the majors do, like restock on the exploration assets. Barrick's entry into Idaho with a really big investment and a junior just at the early stages of exploration is a sign of what can happen when the cupboard runs bare and the senior companies start looking around for ways to fill those cupboards.
Yeah, I totally agree. You are behind us, but look, the bigger guys are going to wake up to some of the better assets that are out there. It's very interesting that since we got our approval in December, we've had a few corporates approach us. Not that we're for sale or anything, but people are starting to wake up to exactly what's going on in the sector. And as you say, I can't remember the size of your deposit. Hugh, what size is it?
4.6 million ounces.
There you go.
You know,
So very similar to what we have. We've got nearly 5 million ounces. Bigger guys are looking for the next project that's going to top up their resource inventory and reserve inventory. So I think it is a quite an interesting stage for developers over the next few years, given, you know, a continued positive sentiment towards gold.
But it's still a tough environment. So here, I would say it's still a tough environment for these majors to actually do business and where to do business. You know, jurisdictional risk has become, you know, top of the list of concerns. And, you know, Chile, you had a little bit of experience of that, Alex, for a period of time, obviously with constitutional change discussions going on. Here, even Idaho, you know, has had its, I guess, doubters in the past. How do you get these majors past all of that kind of jurisdictional component and say, we have to risk this thing? We can show you how to get to, you know, a route to production here. What do you have to do?
Yeah, well let me step back for a second and just address one of the comments you made earlier, Matt, about the margins. Right now, the gold industry is making about 40% margins over ASIC. And when I say gold industry, I'm talking about seniors, intermediates, and juniors included. And that's been pretty consistent, really, over the last 10 years. So they are making margins. And they are, you know, they are subject to what's going on in the broader market, which is underinvestment in the small cap space. So we beat ourselves up an awful lot. But I just want to point out that this is not just a gold industry specific thing. The S&P 500 is trading at a level we have not seen relative to the smaller cap Russell 5000 since 2002. It's off about a third since then. And if you look at the S&P 500 trading at about 21 times 2024 expected earnings, that's almost 50% higher than the TSX, which is a more smaller cap driven index, by about 50%. So my point is, we beat ourselves up, but the industry's actually doing a pretty good job on capital discipline. And to your point, you know, looking at places which offer a good opportunity, relatively lower risk jurisdictionally. And I think that bodes well for both the Western United States and Chile. I know we go through these ups and downs in South America, but I think fundamentally you've got a country in Chile and in some of the other South American countries, but Chile at the lead, that understands mining. And so I'll bring it back to Idaho, and I'll say the same thing about Idaho, a state that was founded with mining in the mid-1800s, and one that has been producing state in silver and in phosphate since the very beginning. And you've got a number of players working in the state doing really good quality work. Some of our peers like Integra and Perpetua and Liberty are bringing their projects forward. We've got about 35 million ounces of undeveloped gold in the state. And I think that makes it a very attractive place to be. And guess what? The Barrick's landed on our doorstep.
Okay, but I want to pick you up on what you said. You talk about S&P 500, you know, it's got a different risk profile. It's got a much more blended risk profile. And I think the perception, and I heard what you said, but I think there's a perception in mining that's very value disruptive and destructive in the sense that I was looking at JP Morgan stats and saying on average last 20 years retail investors make about 2% return. Kind of sucks. That's to put my money in the bank, right? So it's hard to know where to put your money. So if I can start with why what the majors want to see from companies like you, it might give me a clue as to what I really should be looking for in a company like yours, because lots of companies like yours say the same things, but they have very different outcomes. So what are those things that you talk about or want to talk about?
Well, I would turn it back to Alex, because he's sold a plus or minus billion-dollar company in the past and has a better flow for me than that on that front.
Yeah, look, I mean, it comes down to execution and delivery. I mean, you know, when we had Rio Alto and we built that company up, we had a pretty low profile. And I can tell you right now, Rio 2, where we are in our life cycle, it's almost deja vu Rio Alto. because a lot of people still don't believe what we're going to do in Chile. And nobody believed what we were going to do in Peru with Rio Alto. And we executed, we delivered, we did as we said we would do, and the rest is history. So I think that's the key in this sector. There's just too much noise. There's been a lot of disasters, as we know, and that's taken away from us developers that are genuine and are focused on execution and delivery.
Yeah, no, I hear you, but I want something more specific from you, because I there is a lot of value destruction. I'm just about to put out a report at the weekend on Tudor Gold. You know, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't look good, right? But so I've got a sense of what I'm looking for. But can you tell me, someone who sold it over, you know, $1 billion plus business, is how do you mitigate that risk for any potential buyer, and therefore, quite frankly, your shareholders? Because you're making sure that this thing has some value at an endpoint rather than pumping the market. So what are those things that make, you know, most sense to focus on as a business?
Well, once again, I mean, look, Hugh's got a different type of deposit to what we have. You know, some people gloss over what we're doing because it's half gram dirt, and they go, well, how do you make money out of half gram dirt? So you got to be able to, you know, comes back once again to execution and delivery and knowing what you've got from a technical perspective and being able to deliver on that, right? So, you know, at Rio Alto, we built that up to a $1.2 billion takeout. Why? Because we bought two mines into production, one that was doing about 220,000 ounces a year. The second one was in construction and about to go to production with very similar characteristics. So it wasn't an exploration story, right? It was a producing story. And it augmented, obviously, Tahoe at the time, who were the acquirer, it augmented their situation, because they were a one-asset company at the time with a project in Guatemala, you know, that was, you know, having problems and has since been closed and now belongs to Pan American. So I hope that answers your question, because, I've never been an explorationist per se. It's always been, find us a project that we think we can advance to potential development and production, and that's what we're good at.
Right. And so here, I'm going to come back to you here, because, yeah, market cap, let's say below 40 million, right? 4.7 million ounces. Again, as Alex says, not far off of where they're at. Obviously, they've moved just a few study phases there, but you're a kind of long ways from where I think traditionally 4 years perhaps you would have been valued. So what's gone wrong in the market that people aren't looking? Is it just broadly equities as a whole? Or is it that gold companies, people need to, there's a kind of new reality to the way that you value gold companies? I mean, how do you move from 40 million bucks, you know, much higher?
Okay, there's a bunch to that. But maybe I'll attack your question by turning it around and saying, what should investors who are coming into the space pursue? And I'm not a financial advisor. I'll say that right off the bat here. But as a mining engineer and somebody who's been in this business for 30 years or 35 years, the one thing is, be diversified. Choose a portfolio of companies. And if you're going to invest in the space, you know, it's okay to have a couple of juniors. It's okay to have a couple of seniors, some royalty companies. But be diversified across the space when you're investing in the space, because anything can go wrong in the mining industry. That's a fact. We're in a risky business. You do get incidents, one-off incidents, which challenge even the best management teams. And there's lots of examples of those that I'm sure Alex and I could come up with. So that's number one. Number two, I think you've got to choose teams that have done it before. And those teams have a lot of bruises. And so, you know, not all the experiences that those teams have had are good ones. And number three, and I say this is the most important one, you know, we started talking about ounces, but what really matters is value. And so when we talk about these projects, we really got to get quickly to, how does that ounce in the ground become a dollar in an investor's hands. And there's everything from the process and the recovery that's possible from that material. There's the social license, which I know both Alex and I feel very strongly about. There's the delivery of that in a mine plan that makes sense and will return capital. And all of these things lead to dividends or takeouts. But at the end of the day, it's value. And I agree entirely with Alex's point here that it's execution, because there's a lot of steps and a lot of things that can go wrong along the way. But if I'm turning that question around for you and thinking about it from an investor point of view, I'd say choose diversification, choose teams that have done it before, and look for NAV. Look for economic value in these deposits we're investing in.
What I want people to do is look around the market. I hear you both saying look for good teams. Have been and done it before. Some will have a few bruises. Some will have big successes, and they've learned a thing or two. But I don't necessarily want them to discount companies. So if I look at where you have been, Alex, and where you have been, Hugh, and I look at where you are now, it'd be easy to kind of say, well, I'm going to discount that. I'm going to say that there's better things to look at, maybe. But what they don't have good teams necessarily, but they may have, maybe on the surface a better story. So how does a company like yours, Hugh, say $40 million market cap, fund the necessary phases that you know you've got to do without taking shortcuts, because that never ends well? Do you have to look at the financing of businesses differently? Do you have to give a little bit more away earlier in the phases? Or is there going to be some white knight with a new form of money that's going to help companies like yours? How's it going to work going forward?
The short answer is yes, we have to do something different in the current market. And the other short answer is no, there is no white knight. We have to advance these projects in the current environment that we're in. We got to count on the long-term support of our investors. Even though our finding cost is a very modest $6 per ounce in the ground, our market cap is about that same $6 an ounce in the ground. So we are not rushing out to issue shares to go drill more ounces in the project. There are things we can do from the desktop in qualifying and quantifying what we have, and there's things we can do strategically. Potentially even taking advantage of this market environment where there are consolidation opportunities and where our team can surface value. So across that spectrum of things that we're doing, we're trying to spend as little money as we can to drive as much value, because frankly, this is not a good time to be issuing shares outside maybe a strategic purpose. You've got to do something different if you want to get a different outcome.
But I think also, Hugh, that in your situation, because you're a little bit earlier, it is tougher. I think where we are, for example, as I said, we're getting some approaches from corporates. So could we advance our project and finance whatever component of equity that we have to do to get this project over the line with a strategic investor? Maybe, right? That could be another miner who wants to come on and go for the ride with us and likes what we're doing. So there's no magic potion there. What people have to look at is whether in two different types of companies, are you trading stocks? Because if you're trading stocks, there's a lot of stuff, right? A lot of fluff in the market, drill results and people putting out stuff, and you can take a 10% lift and buy and sell. In our case, we don't have that. We don't have that ability. We're not a trading stock, and I don't think Hugh's Revival Gold is a trading stock either. It's more of a, are you willing to play the long game and watch this thing go from X dollars to Y dollars in valuation, because you've got the patience to do that? So I think you got to look at the different tiers of types of investments you want to get involved in.
No, I hear you. And I think, what we've seen is a few companies coming together last year. Integra was one of them. You mentioned them, Hugh. It's not a case of 1 + 1 = 3. It's 1 + 1 = survival. Stay in the game to be able to kind of, you know, play another day, as it were. That's what it has, feels like in a lot of instances with a lot of good companies. These aren't even the bad companies, these are the good companies. I look, and I want to say this, and I think you two have got superb management teams. Okay, I think you genuinely, when Merle and I talk about you companies, we're talking about very, very fondly, and, you know, we like what you're doing. But I also want you to tell me the kind of game plan for companies like yours to be able to kind of move to the next part of the game when the market hasn't been giving you guys or anyone, quite frankly, credit for 3 years. So that, you know what I mean? It's a very tough ask, but I need you to tell me it's going to be okay, and patience is the key.
Have you got a stream or royalty on your project?
We don't have a third party stream royalty.
I'm not saying you have to, but interesting going on what Matt's saying. I mean, when we got Wheaton on board and a stream, when was it? Plus 2 years ago. Everybody went, wow, you know, there's a validation, you know, from somebody like Wheaton that they've come on board. And if I can remember back then, yeah, maybe our stock appreciated a bit, you know, as a result of that validation. So when I come to talk about a strategic, you know, you know, and I'm not going to mention company names, but company X comes along and it says, right, you know, we want to take down your next financing and be a 19% shareholder of your company. And they're a creditable and well-recognized miner out there. Then that will give the validation as well, right? So the problem with us is it's, you know, once again, as I'm saying, it's getting that validation and getting that recognition, you know, and why would people want to invest in our two companies, for example, when they can invest in a company, well, maybe months ago or a year ago, in a company like Snowline, for example, who were putting out magnificent drill results in the Yukon, who are way behind where we are, who probably might be, you know, I mean, it looks like a project that could get to production. There's a lot of things that need to be done there, but at the end of the day, it's probably 5 to 7 years, maybe 5 to 10 years away from being anything. But it's worth 5, 6 times, 7 times more than any of our companies, right?
But this is the beauty of the conversations like this. We can all point to that one company, right? And if you look at Chris Catt and Quinton Henning and even like Eric Sprott, you know, in 2020, just throwing the money out randomly at a bunch of companies, they're going to get one or two right. It's great, right? Exploration is really, really freaking hard. Okay,
let me jump in here, Matt.
Let
me jump in here because we're all saying the same thing.
We are violently agreeing.
But let me try and first of all, you know, one of the big reasons a lot of us do what we do is because that's where the market is driving us, right? And if you break down, I think Alex is onto a good suggestion here, is to break this down into developers and explorers. What does the market want out of explorers? They want that 1 in a million exploration win, home run. You know, potentially the snow line, potentially the newfound gold. I have my doubts about some of these things that run up into the hundreds of millions of market cap, but there are investors who want to invest in that and clamor on the next story that jumps onto social media and becomes the retail frenzy. The other side of things are the developers, and I'd say, you know, closer to production, better, more valuable, stamp of approval from a strategic in some form or another, ability to fund even better still. And those trade on ultimately what's going to come out of the ground and the NAV that's possible to deliver. So they're two different things and two different kinds of investors who are pursuing those things. And for my money, I prefer the developers to the explorers because it's as you suggest, it's, you know, invest in 200 and hope you get one of them right, as opposed to methodically going through the process of how do we turn rock in the ground into dollars into an investor's hands. And I think that's where Alex and I are, I think, very, you know, cut from the same cloth. You know, how do we do that? How do we do that as efficiently as possible? And how do we survive the vagaries of the market in between?
No, here you are. And our returns, our best returns, consistent returns, are with development companies from early stage development, obviously, right the way through to either getting taken out or actually getting financed into production. You know, lithium, copper, we've seen it in gold. You know, I agree with you. We're in violent agreement. Let's talk about. So I'm grilling you a little bit on your own individual strategies and so forth. But let's come back to the thematic component here. Okay. Now, Hugh, you've been throwing a lot of quite good data at us today. You know, gold has moved. Will it continue to move? Is it going to sit here for a while, as it kind of did last year? Kind of sat around the same sort of 2000 level for a long time. What's going to drive it?
You know, I don't mean to be frivolous, but 5,000 years of history says it's going to keep going up. So we've evaluated our projects at much lower gold prices. So we really don't mind so much where the price of gold goes. What I'm more interested in is are we going to start to see retail investors, generalist investors, buying instead of selling the ETFs? And I'd love to know what's going on with that right now, because the ETF movement, the fund flows are moving against the metal, which is odd. And the metal is moving against what's happening of late with the Fed and with the U.S. dollar. So those things are interesting to me. But really what we need in order for this sector to really take off, I think, is for the generalist investor to start, first of all, investing in small cap value names. And secondly, to turn on to the precious metal space. And I think the catalyst for that is going to be a capitulation in the big cap tech names, and a look for value and return of shareholder wealth through small cap and resource companies. And in the meantime, you know, you keep asking about catalysts. I think Alex and I have said that there are corporate catalysts out there. There's not a lot of technical catalysts, at least from a revival gold perspective. We've already discovered one of the largest new discoveries of gold in the U.S. in the last decade. We've put out a very favorable 27% IRR after-tax PFS, so de-risking on a brownfield site with existing infrastructure, very little earth moving, which is a risky thing to do, and with a team that's operated this project before. So I think we've done all of those things correctly. What we've got to look to is corporate catalysts that will change the paradigm for revival gold. And that could take the shape of anything from a strategic transaction to a potential roll-up opportunities to potentially acquiring something that enhances our portfolio and for which our investors will get even more leverage to gold.
Yeah, I tend to agree. You know, same, you know, I think gold's, the good thing is we're not seeing, you know, parabolic movements in the price of gold, right? We're seeing step changes. And we were we were $1,250 there for 5 years. We went up to $1,850 for about 3 years. And now we're, you know, we've breached $2,100 and, you know, who knows what the next level is. And gold's doing what it's supposed to be doing. And it's behaving like a currency as well, which is the differentiator there. But it's really interesting because we're in this financing mode, and we're dealing with, you know, we've got quite a lot of interest in our financing from funds and banks, the resource funds and various banks. But the interesting that the banks, most of the banks are still using $1,350 for a gold price.
Okay,
$1,350, which is shocking to me. I haven't been exposed to those guys yet, but it's going to be an interesting conversation.
They do need a kind of consistency, but it has been consistently above 1650 for, a few years now, right?
I know.
Even I would,
conservatism.
I think that's a function of, supply demand. What's interesting, I think, about these smaller projects, you know, 100 million, 100, I think yours is 130 or 128 million. Alex, we're 110. But what's great about these projects is you've got a ton of different folks to go after to fund them. Yeah. And they are there. There's lots of them.
Oh, no,
it's more about the cost of the capital that's out there.
There's no lack of interest. So I think, you know, people should feel comfortable about that here we are in the financing phase, and there's no lack of interest from various funds and banks to get involved in this project. As you say, it comes down to cost of capital. I think it's all about controlling margins. And if you can get a project financed at 1650 or whatever the number is, and the gold price settles in at 2100 or where it does, I mean, it's about managing that margin, being able to retire debt quickly and become a positive cash generator going forward. That's really, what our ambition really will be.
And meanwhile, the price of gold's just going up. The gold's not going anywhere. We prudently, take these projects forward. I mean, since we founded our companies, Alex, I mean, the price of gold's almost doubled, I think.
Yeah.
So, yes, costs have gone up, Matt. I hear you on that front. But the exposure to the revenue, the meaningfulness of a project that's producing 100,000 ounces or even 65,000 ounces in our case, that's a meaningful revenue generator. And very important for the communities because, remember, whether you're talking 300 jobs in the U.S. or 1,200 jobs in Chile, these projects are really meaningful to the communities.
No, I get that. In terms of that whole the permission, social license stuff, and I know you guys do a great job on that, but I will come on to that, promise. But I just want to talk about that margin. Okay, if the margin is staying the same, there are certain things that the companies must be able to do. You talk about the cost of capital or the return on capital invested, and the time frame to positive cash flow, free cash flow, all of those things that you can affect change on grade allowing, etc. But markets allowing, but those are the things I want to hear from you guys about why you're more likely to see than someone saying exactly the same thing as you. Hence, conversation about management teams, experience, etc. Okay, let's go on. Let's talk about social, because I think there's real mixed views on this one. ESG, I think that phrase got used and abused, and people kind of felt in love and then out of love with it.
Can I just say something, Matthew? I mean, ESG has become this buzz word thing over the last 2 or 3 years. But I've been in the mining industry 40 years, and we've always done ESG, right? It's been called different things, right? CSR, right. Whatever it is. So the mining industry is a good, in general terms, is a good steward when it comes down to ESG. But now it's promoted to the point where everybody's putting out these glossy, we're the best mining company in the world, and we, sustainable, and the word sustainable doesn't relate to mining in my mind, but sustainable, doing this and doing that and whatever. And they're not, right? They're not. And then, it flies in the face of all this push. And now we're seeing that funds are starting to, particularly ESG funds, are starting to lose support and capital. I don't even know what an ESG fund means anyway. At the end of the day, all this rubbish has got to stop, and it's just got to go back to bare basics, which is good stewardship, from a corporate governance perspective, from a social perspective, and from an environmental perspective. But they have been cornerstones of this industry for forever, since I've been in it anyway. So nothing's really changed, but it's just this focus to it. And then then you look at some of the disasters that happened. Silver, SSRM, right? The old silver standard. 9 people got killed in their project.
I saw that.
In Turkey, 2 months ago? All quiet on the Western Front. And then the only press release they put out just recently was to do some internal promotions in the company, which blew me away because I thought, what's going on here? But, when you look at their ESG statement, which is front and forward in their website, we take a long-term view of our responsibility, and this is reflected in the policies that guide our business decisions and a corporate culture which fosters safe and ethical behavior across all levels of the company. Our goal is to ensure that our engagement with our stakeholders, including our workforce, industry, et cetera, is good. But at the end of the day, they've just killed 9 people, right? And everybody's going, no, we got a joint venture partner. They were in charge of the operations. Bullshit, right? At the end of the day, it goes back to the parent company who started this project. So there's an example where ESG just doesn't mesh with what they're doing. Governance from a board perspective, there should be changes to management and including the board, hasn't happened. Environment, well, they've just created a huge mess. And social, well, they've killed people, right? And that doesn't gel with me. And then, you know, just recently also, a Cisco Development Corp got a $250,000 or $270,000 environmental fine for Barkerville Gold in BC, right? But you go to the Cisco Development website, you look at their ESG policy, and it's crystal clear. You know, we're beautiful. We don't harm anybody. We're the best people in the world. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, you know, accidents are going to happen. We understand that nothing's unavoidable, but with all this focus towards ESG, it's like we're this pristine business that we're not, right? Mining is a difficult business. It's not sustainable. Mines start and close. What you leave behind is hopefully sustainable businesses that are not related to mining that people can get into. And as I say to everybody, you know, when governments change and people go, oh, well, there's a new government in this country, there's a new government in that country, and that's all good for mining. No, it's all about social, social, social. Governments don't mandate mining, right? Governments can promote mining in a country, but at the end of the day, it's the social fabric. And if you can get the social support for mining and push that up to government, you will get your approvals, you will get everything that you need. To get the, you know, your project developed and to make the social impacts that you're expecting to do, as Hugh mentioned about employment and other things. So sorry, that's my rant on ESG.
No, but let's pick up on that because it's really important, because we've kind of just jokingly had a dig at ESG the you know, for the past couple of years. In that instance in Turkey, SSRM is called. What do you think should happen? You know, because it's like the companies need to be held accountable. It's the PR whitewashing that happens in this sector. We, you know, we're exposed as well. You know, people don't necessarily want to be asked tough questions because, you know, the company doesn't look good. You know, our companies don't want us on board. It's about managing the perception of the company rather than the reality of the company. So in that scenario, what would you say should happen?
Well, complete transparency about what's going on, because it's silent running. Nobody knows what is happening in Turkey. The incident sort of coincided with their quarterly announcement, so it was sort of glossed over. I mean, they mentioned obviously that this incident happened, but from a governance perspective, there has to be changes to personnel. I mean, they built this asset, remembering. SSRM is a result of a merger with Silver Standard and the old, I can't remember the company that was...
Alacer, yeah.
Alacer, right? And these guys come from Alacer, which built Koppla, right? The project in Turkey. So they're responsible. Can't say, oh, I was, you know, the other guys from the other company. So governance, you know, the board has to get involved. I would expect it at least heads to roll at the management level and, you know, accountability and somebody to step up and take control of the situation and to report back to shareholders and to the market about all the things that they're discovering and why, you know, I mean, obviously it's an ongoing investigation, but there is some level of transparency and comfort that you can bring people. Now, I don't even, you know, we don't even know what's happening in Turkey, you know, from the point of view of all the families and whatever that have been impacted by this. But it's like it's, oh, well, that's Turkey, that's over there. And, you know, here we are, we're a really good company over here in Canada. And, you know, so I think to me, there should have been a response at the corporate level and more transparency than what's happened so far on what's going on. And you know, there is not. I mean, Silver Standard, SSRM, sorry, are a strange lot. But their share price reflects what's happened too, which is good.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, well, let's see what comes out of that.
Yeah.
But it's I think that companies, mining companies, have a bad enough rep without things like that happening. You know, people talking about damage to the environment and damage to this, but we're talking about individuals killed and families affected. I think that it reminds me of an ex company that I've interviewed a couple of times from Southern Africa, just keep it vague. It seems on a quarterly basis have to make an announcement about someone killed in one of their mines. And I was reading through the press. It's a cookie cutter, cut and paste job, fill in individual's name per quarter, pretty much every quarter for the last 2 years, right? Big, big company. And I said to, we're not having them back on, because I just kind of was like, hang on. This is the worst side of mining, right? This is the worst side of mining. It's got enough negativity around the actual mining component and the, you know, maybe what it does to the environment from the younger generation. But when the stuff like that happens, it's not good. I mean, sorry, Hugh, we're kind of maybe going down a very negative path here.
Doing business. But I think it needs to be said, because it's part of this gloss over of ESG, right, that I've been talking about. And to me, it's, you know, I'm sure Hugh sees it similar. I mean, you know, we are.
Yeah, listen. For me, I just it's a tragedy, and I feel very badly for those people affected. It's a tragedy, and you know, it's very difficult for us to armchair this one. I think I would just say mining is a risky business, and people lose their lives in the mining industry, and it's very tragic, and it's especially tragic when it's the result of bad leadership or bad process. And I don't know enough about this particular situation, but it's tragic. And I agree with Alex's point that about this misuse of the word sustainability, and maybe this is a more constructive place to go. I think of our business as a temporal use of the land. And, you know, if we're doing our jobs properly, we're going in, we're taking the resource out of the ground, and we're putting it to good use for man's good purposes, whether that's electrical vehicles, whether that's to support the central bank with its currencies, whatever it happens to be. And then we put the place back into good shape for other uses. And I think it's a misnomer to describe it as a sustainable activity. And furthermore, I'd say that we have a responsibility to do this, because it would be like leaving a person uneducated or a community unconnected to the internet to not take advantage of the resources we have available to us and to do it responsibly. And I know Alex feels the same way I do about doing things responsibly, and most of us who work in the mining industry, you know, we love the outdoors, we fly fish, we hunt, we like to walk in the woods, and we appreciate the environment in which we're working. Most of us live in these places, and so, you know, we take care of where we are, and we think pretty carefully about the way we do it. And those people who live and work in industries and in places that don't have anything to do with delivering the basic materials that we all use for our daily life, need to really think carefully about what is the root of environmental degradation and concern, and who are the people actually creating the solutions so that we can continue on with a modern productive society. And I would say, it's people like, the folks on the Rio 2 team and the Revival Gold team that are doing the latter, working constructively in the environment to deliver the materials that we all need and that we all use in a responsible manner.
Okay. I want to talk about, here he's saying, so we went down a bit of a negative path there, but it's hard not to be negative about something, you know, tragic, irresponsible, negligent potentially. Let's talk about metal supercycles. I think that's the thing I'm going to want to end on a high, okay? Because there's not been enough investment in this space for easily 15 years, okay? The battery metal guys are jumping on that bandwagon and going, well, we're not going to have enough copper, we're not going to have enough nickel, we're not going to have you name it, graphite, lithium, for these cars that we want. Precious metals, likewise. You guys are talking about lack of investment, and there's not many big projects ready to go. What have we investors got to look forward to? Is this huge lack of investment actually going to be good news for us this year, next year, or for the next few years? How do you read the situation, Alex?
I think the next few years, I mean, I'd hate to say next year. I mean, it's hard to predict, but certainly underinvestment is a positive to any business. Eventually, when the money starts coming through or the productivity starts hitting the straps. So, you know, I love being in gold. I mean, you talk about all these other commodities and they're good too, but they're cyclical, right? Commodities are cyclical. Look at nickel, look at lithium, look at them all, cobalt, whatever you want to pick on. And copper is too. So I love gold because gold is what Hugh was saying earlier on, is this it's doing the right thing, and it's been doing this methodically, gaining value over many years, hundreds of years. So I like gold. I think you know, the underinvestment there will be good for companies like us going forward. And as I said, you know, we're a good bellwether for this. The fact that we are moving this project forward, the fact that we are getting corporate interest in what we're doing, will happen to other companies like Hughes, etc., who advance their projects like we are through the financing stage into construction and production. It'll come, and that should impact our valuation. Yeah, that's my comment on that. Super cycle.
Metal super cycle.
I don't know. I was in copper. I started off in copper back in the early 2000s, and it was 2004, and everybody was talking about a super cycle then, and sort of happened, but it never really happened like everybody thought it was going to happen. I'm sort of a bit tempered by all that. I think, yeah, you know, copper is one of these things that sort of goes up, goes down as well, but it tends to sort of eke its way up a little bit. But, you know, I just don't like the word super cycle. It doesn't gel with me.
Yeah, look, just look at what's happened in the oil and gas industry. You know, that industry was beat up. And guess what? Oil is essential to our way of life. The price of oil's, you know, at a level here where these companies are making a ton of money. They're buying back shares. They're paying dividends. They almost don't know what to do with all the cash they're making. So there's the oil industry. The uranium industry is another. You know, we saw a dearth of investment in the uranium space. And then, boy, when it comes back hard. And I think we'll see the same thing in the gold space now. 15 years of, I would say, relatively speaking, underinvestment or at least 12 years of underinvestment in the space. And that'll boomerang back. And it'll be just as we were saying on the outset, it'll be a scramble. Everybody's going to look for seats on the bus. There aren't going to be any. And those of us who've been in the industry, soldiered through, preserved our capital structures, will have a lot of winnings at the end of our journey.
Okay. Well, let's see where it ends up. Guys, better wrap it up here. Except maybe you, Hugh. There are definitely two grumpy men in this conversation. Maybe it's not. You're not one of them.
Well, I can be grumpier.
We know.
All my notes I've got here. Look.
Okay. Well, I hope you got through all your talking points. And if you haven't, we can always come back and do this again as well. Maybe we'll add Doug Rauscher in here.
This is about stuff going on in the business. This is not my business. This is stuff going on in the business. So you know, yeah, look, I think, you know, you talk about being negative. I think... You know, what we have to do is we have to say this business has a lot of positives to it, but there are a lot of negatives as well. Not only in execution, like what we're talking about ESG, but also in the promotion and the pumping of stories that really are nothing, right? So I think that exposure, and you know that I'm quite vocal on Twitter, is necessary.
No, I hear it. Maybe we can do another one. on said subject, maybe learnings from last year. By learnings, I mean looking at absolute train wrecks from last year. So look, I'm going to wrap it up there, guys. Maybe give us 30 seconds on why investors should invest in your company here, Revival Gold.
Yeah, look, we have something that is extremely precious, a very large gold deposit in the West United States on a brownfield site with a very positive PFS, speaking to the economics and the returns that are possible from that project. We're advancing it judiciously, preserving our capital structure, looking for opportunities corporately in this environment to accelerate our growth and improve our risk profile for investors.
Yeah, look, I mean, we execute and deliver, right? If you want to get involved in an investment story for the next 2 to 3 years, Rio 2 is ideal for anybody who wants to park their money out for the next 2 or 3 years. But if you're looking for a quick trade, don't look at us. That's all I can say.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.